Welcome to the Gripcast Gymnastics Unfiltered. I'm your host, Tamille Jones. This is the platform to where we discuss the ins and outs of everything gymnastics. We would like to thank our sponsor, Gymnasts United, Inc. and Pope Counseling Center for supporting this podcast. Today, we would like to introduce a legend, Wendy Hillard. Wendy Hillard was a USA Gymnastics Hall of Fame member. She is the first Black to represent the U.S. Rhythmic Gymnastics and coached a 1996 Olympian. She's the first Black president of the Women's Sports Foundation. She was an Olympic sportscaster and a Broadway performer. She also was a director of the sports for NYC 2012 Olympic and Paralympic bid. In 1996, she founded the Wendy Hillard Gymnastics Foundation, which provides free and low-cost gymnastics for over 20,000 urban youth in the NYC. Wendy's gymnastics training was through the Detroit Recreational Department. In 1996, Wendy expanded her Gymnastics Foundation program within Detroit. She lives in Harlem now with her husband, Robert, and her two sons, Kennedy and Bailey. Welcome, Wendy, to our podcast. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing well.
Well, great. I'm glad to have you on. I think this is a great conversation we're going to have about rhythmic gymnastics and artistic gymnastics. And I think sometimes our audience doesn't understand that there is two types of gymnastics that we have here in the United States. So can you kind of explain rhythmic gymnastics versus artistic?
Sure. So the term gymnastics is basically movement on or with apparatus. So in rhythmic gymnastics, we work with apparatus. We work with hand apparatus, the ribbon, the ball, the hoop, the jump rope, the clubs. All of the routines are performed to music, and they are done on a floor exercise mat without the springs. Artistic gymnastics is done on apparatus, right? On the balance beam, on the bars, for men's, on the pommel horse, on the floor. So that's kind of the difference. Just as an overall, back in the day, the women on the Olympics actually used to have to do their artistic gymnastics routines and a group rhythmic routine. So rhythmic gymnastics can be performed as an individual, one person on the mat, or as a group, and now it's five people that do a synchronized routine to one or two pieces of apparatus. So they're very much connected. I actually started off as a tumbler, so tumbling trampoline, which is another discipline in gymnastics. I started out as a tumbler, and then I became an artistic gymnast, and then I moved to rhythmic gymnastics.
So what made you move into rhythmic gymnastics?
Well, it was really by happenstance. So in Detroit, right in the city of Detroit, they didn't have a lot of or any basically full artistic gymnastics programs. I was at the Y and we were doing tumbling. It was great, but I wanted to do full gymnastics. I went out to the suburbs, and one of the places I was taking gymnastics was at the Jewish Community Center, and they had just hired a husband and wife team from the former Soviet Union. They were from the Ukraine, and it just so happened that the wife, Dr. Zina Marinov, was a master sport, a top athlete in rhythmic gymnastics. And she passed away in 2008, but we always kind of joked. I say she recruited me to become a rhythmic gymnast, and she said, I begged her to teach me rhythmic gymnastics, but I didn't know what rhythmic gymnastics was. So it's the first one, but it really was just, luck that I ran into a really great coach in rhythmic gymnastics, and that's when I switched over.
So within your career within gymnastics, what are some of your proudest moments as
a
gymnast?
Yeah, no, I was really, proudest moments. That's interesting. I mean, I was really honored to be selected for the national team. So that was a group routine, and I was the first Black to do that one. So it's interesting when you are an elite athlete, you just kind of worry about making a team and doing what you kind of want to do. And you just work and things happen as they realize. But I would say proudest moments. That was hard, but I would say we were training for the world championships. So as I mentioned, you have group or individual. And we were training for the group routine for the world championships one year at the Olympic Training Center. What they would do is they'd bring probably 12 or 14 of the top gymnasts together. They'd make kind of two squads and you train, and then they'd pick the team at the end of like 6 weeks training. So they were announcing the team. By this time, I had already competed in two world championships. When they announced the team, they didn't announce my name. When they were going to announce six gymnasts, and everybody was really, really surprised, and I was surprised too. And when I asked the coach, I'm like, you know, how come I wasn't on the team? Because I was in the top group. You know, I was a top athlete. And she says, Wendy, you just stick out too much. And I was like, wow. What? I said, really? You can tell me that? You can say that? In the 1980s, I mean, I thought we were past that, which obviously people are realizing it's a big issue. But I think what I'm proud about is that, you know, and I told my folks, and it was heartbreaking. You know, I was crying, and they reached out to the USGF at that time, USA Gymnastics, and told them the situation. And USA Gymnastics said, well, we're just going to scrap this selection process and take the top six gymnasts in the country. And so I was allowed to go. And so what I'm proud about is more really from the motivation from my parents, because, you know, they knew that you have to fight these things. You just can't take them at face value. And it taught me a long lesson, is that sometimes you really have to go beyond even the talent you have, the success you have as a gymnast, and really fight for what's right. And so that's why I'm kind of proud of that moment.
Wow. That's awesome. You had a very good career within gymnastics. How did you know that you still wanted that to be a part of your life after your personal career, that you wanted to dedicate your life to the sport?
You know, that's a really interesting question. So I think as most people go along, you know, when you stop your gymnastics career, I think everyone understands this. You kind of, what are we going to do next? Because you spend so much time, especially if you're an elite athlete. I mean, your whole schedule is scheduled about around your gymnastics.
Yes.
And so I was fortunate to be in New York City. So I moved to New York City at the end. And so what it allowed me was a few more options, because I finished here. I came here to go to school. My actually degree's in journalism. So I really did look forward to using my journalism to become a broadcaster and using my gymnastic skills to be a performer, which I could do in New York City. So I had that option, but I was also coaching, and people have to understand, you know, so if I went from being elite gymnast and then I started coaching and then I became elite coach, you spend the same amount of time in the gym.
Yes.
So
yes.
At that point, I was like in the gym as a gymnast and then in the gym as a coach. I mean, but I loved it. I really did love being a coach. But when Allianz Backer Wilson is her name. She married Blaine Wilson. Talk about keeping it in gymnastics. But Allianz was in the group routine. So when she went off to train for the Olympics, I kind of decided at that point that I wanted to start a foundation, because the sport of gymnastics hadn't become much more diverse. It was getting very, very expensive. Now, granted, you know, I took gymnastics in the recreation department. So my coaches were hired by Detroit. They had two other coaches come over from Ukraine. And so they were paid by the city of Detroit. So it didn't really cost us a lot to do gymnastics, but we had these really fabulous coaches and we had the support of the city. So I really thought that people needed to have that opportunity where I was. And I just finished I was finishing my term as a president of the Women's Sports Foundation. So I spent a lot of time advocating for rights for, you know, athletes to compete and things like that. So it was just a time, you know, starting the foundation, I didn't think it was going to be life work necessarily, but I knew kind of the plan I wanted to do. So it was more, I had a passion. It's really funny because my parents were always, it took me a long time to graduate from college because I would always, you know, stop off a semester and go like train in Bulgaria or something like that. And they kept saying, Wendy, you're going to need your college degree to support yourself and work. And I was like, yeah. And I did it. And I graduated. And I graduated with honors. But I still ended up doing gymnastics. So, yeah. But, you know, I'm like, I listened to your parents. And it's true. And I'm glad I did. But it's just always been a passion of mine. I've been fortunate enough to be able to make a way that I can enjoy the sport through giving it to others.
What is your opinion on how the direction of gymnastics is going at this moment? There's a lot going on within the industry, so including rhythmic and artistic gymnastics.
Well, there's a lot going on in the world. Let's
Yes.
start there, okay? We can almost take it backwards.
Yeah.
Because the sport of gymnastics, I mean, there are just so many levels and so much is going on. I think personally, it's a time for everyone to look at how sports, it's on different levels, right? Look at how sports is, from my standpoint, I always want sports to be accessible to people. It's kind of old school. I don't think people realize that gymnastics went through this whole change where it used to be more of a community sport. I mean, people back in the day used to learn gymnastics at the Y, and then they could just train a little bit more and, go to college and make an Olympic team. As it became more popular, it went to the model of private gymnastics clubs. And what that did is, the level of gymnastics, of course, came up because it was so popular. But when you had the private clubs, they didn't have the resources of larger organizations to follow all of the protocols normally taken when you have to deal with young people in sports. And it kind of made it a little bit too elite and too and not enough focus on the safety issues. For us as a foundation, for the last 10 years, we've been partnered with the Harlem Children's Zone. So the Harlem Children's Zone is a large educational organization in New York City. But safety is the key for them because they're in Harlem. So they first part of safety is just to protect the kids. So we've always had security guards. We've always had a boatload of rules that we had to follow when we traveled, how the kids stayed in hotels, that type of access. And that actually protected us as an organization. And at first I found it cumbersome, right? I'm like, really, do we need to, can't we just get in the car and go to the meet? And they couldn't do that one. So I think what happened with the sport is it just became too elite and not enough. These small clubs, it was hard for them to keep their eye on the control. So the gymnastics right now, I think, is coming to a point where there's so much more emphasis on safety as it should be. And people are realizing that there's so much more emphasis on coaching and how you relate with young people that, it just it's it everything has to be checked, right? You just have to have more open control. That's kind of the thing. You just have more of attention on things because people can now, express themselves more. Also, the one thing you didn't mention is that I was elected as on the chair of USA Gymnastics, the Athletes Council. We had a very strong Athletes Council for many years, and it was kind of interesting there because what our job was at USA Gymnastics was to sit and make sure the athletes were taken care of. And at that time, the board was pretty large, but our council was pretty big, and I served on with a lot of top gymnasts. And that taught me the importance of the athlete's voice. But of course, by this time, many of us were finishing our career. And the difficulty with artistic gymnastics was that often the artistic gymnasts would maybe retire by the time they were 15 or 16. And you only had 10 years to stay on, so they didn't have time to get their voice up. So now we're moving more towards that, where, I mean, there's a new bill out in Washington, like today, that they're looking at to give athletes more voice. And I think that direction, as you see, when the athletes speak, it could work and get done. I've been a
Yes.
proponent of that for a long time, and that's where we're going in the sport. And I just think that people need to, everybody, because you can with social media express yourself, this and that, you have to step back and look at the whole situation and see that the sport is making a change and that it is for the good, that athletes are protected and we're putting this focus on safety, and that we will come on the other side of this. The sport itself is a beautiful sport. It provides so much for the athletes that participate. We just need it to equal out the balance between the athlete and the adults in the sport, not being able to be so controlled over the athlete's career.
I think for these athletes to be strong enough to express themselves or different things that have happened to them, has really given them a voice. And then it also has given other people the awareness of things going on. But can you tell us a little bit about your foundation that you have within New York and Detroit?
Sure. So the Wendy Hilliard Gymnastics Foundation, I mean, we started relatively small in New York City, and our mission is to provide gymnastics to improve the emotional and physical health of urban youth. So our really goal was really to have gymnastics in places where there wasn't gymnastics or affordable, especially affordable gymnastics. We provide free and low cost, so people that work with our program can always take the sport and not have the cost be the problem that prevents them from taking the sport. But we started basically just, I would say it's how we've been able to survive, especially in New York City, is through partnerships. So we partner with organizations that provide things that are hard and very expensive, which is space in New York City. It's really space. So we've really used the model of partnering with larger organizations so that we have access to space or things like that or other support. And then we raise money. I get a lot of fundraisers. We do public funding, grants, and individual donors. So it's a whole process. I mean, our model is basically we run in one way like a gymnastics school, and we offer what we have, our community program, which is our basic gymnastics, but our competitive team, we have three teams, right? The three disciplines that we offer, rhythmic gymnastics, girls artistic gymnastics, and tumbling and trampoline. And so what that does, which is very interesting, because when I was in Detroit, our gymnastics program had rhythmic gymnastics, girls artistic, and acro sports or sports acro or acrobatics, which they call now. So I've always been in a gym where you had these three disciplines. And what it did is, for one, it made you appreciate the other disciplines, but it also allowed you to maybe transfer. So some of the kids in my program, we just had two of our girls just went off to college. And it was so funny. They've been with us for 8 years, but they competed. They started on the girls artistic team, and then they went to the rhythmic team, and then they finished in the TNT team. And it was great because they could stay in the sport for a long time. And it offers more, like if you have talent for girls artistic or rhythmic or TNT, you know, you have many more options. But it's been really rewarding. I mean, we've worked very, very hard. I have a board of directors. They're great board of directors. Some of them are gymnasts, Olympians, and lawyers and people that serve the city. It's like a whole mix of people that are responsible as a 501c3, and we're serious about that one because you just gotta we're providing a community service. So after being in New York for so long, I was inspired to take it back to Detroit. There's a thing called Detroit Homecoming that started maybe 6 or 7 years ago to encourage expats, they call us, people that were born in Detroit and live other places, to invest in the city. And people were investing in, you know, buildings and sports arenas. And I said, how can I invest? So I said, let me go back to Detroit. So we timed it for the 2016 Olympics. And I'm like, oh my gosh, kids are going to be so excited because Simone Biles is going to be so excited. So I said, let's time it to do that one. And then the other thing that had Detroit was great because, of course, I had my teammates were there. So I had a history there. We had people there to help us on the ground. But I will say we got really great support. So Inverlite, who produces the carpeted bonded foam that everybody uses over their floor exercise, things like that, they reached out to me after they read an article because I was in Rio, and they provided us free, you know, gymnastics carpets, which is great. And I said, great, our color's purple, save us purple ones. And then Tumble Track, which is also based in Michigan, gave us some gymnastics equipment to set up our first gym. So that was such a great opportunity for us to, you know, launch the Detroit program very successfully. And so next year it'll be 5 years of the Detroit program. And we've been able to basically, another key is that our instructors, and I have to give a shout out, I've got fabulous staff. I'm so proud of my staff. I don't coach very often, seriously. If I have to go in and coach, I just take a nap because it takes so much energy. I spend my time now, you know, raising money and doing administration. But what is great is that we've been around so long that some of the people in our program have now come back to coach. Alexis Page, who is from Harlem and made the national team and was a national champion, international champion in rhythmic gymnastics. She's our rhythmic coach. Wow. Megan Cox, who's from Brooklyn, was a level 10 gymnast. Really, she's a fabulous coach, and she sent some of our kids to state championships. And then Dennis Rivera Lopez is our TNT coach. coach who was on our tumbling team and went to national championships, and he gives back, and he's from Harlem too. So what we're able to provide in our program is staff that looks like the kids that we serve, which is not very often happen in gymnastics. So we've really kind of created a community, a very diverse community. We're pretty much, you know, 75% Black and 25%, 30% almost Hispanic or Latino. And so it's a very unusual for gymnastics environment, but the level of gymnastics is always very high. I told you my coaches were from the Ukraine. I have coaches that have been from the former Soviet Union. So the level of gymnastics has always been the key, that we do high level technical gymnastics. It just doesn't cost a lot. So that's
fantastic. That's absolutely fantastic. And I love that you're giving that access to those gymnasts and to those families that are interested. And I think that's the key, because I think when people think of gymnastics, they automatically think it's, you know, expensive. I know when I had my gym, we always did programs within libraries just to have that opportunity to explore gymnastics with kids that were interested, just to see and get a little taste to see if they liked it. So I think having that access and then being able for it to be affordable is absolutely fantastic. So during this COVID season, how has your foundation been affected?
Well, like everybody else, we had to get out of the gym. So, you know, and we're in New York City and Detroit, two cities that were hit very early and very hard with the COVID-19. And so I will say that, you know, we took it seriously because we had to. We were just in the mix. But I will say we had to stop at mid-March, right? We couldn't go into our facility. Our coaches turned around right away, seriously, like the next, like 3 days later, and started doing practices on Zoom. We had three different coaches, three different teams. They were on Zoom three times a week. And I really give it to them, because they just stepped it up. They kept the kids engaged. They kept them fit. They were very creative. And also it allowed me not to work at all, because I had to, you know, go and take care of all the administrative stuff, to write all the grants, to write for all of the public funding, and to raise money, to be in contact. I mean, it was pretty, you know, tough, as everybody's been tough. So we just had to work very hard to sustain our funding, to sustain our kids, and to go to Zoom to keep the kids engaged and keep them really doing gymnastics, because it was a hard time for all of the school kids, right? They are now at home and didn't see their teachers or their friends. So one of the things they really liked was doing, you know, at least seeing their coaches on Zoom and hearing directions and fun things from people that weren't their parents or their teachers. So, you know, so we kind of mastered how we do Zoom, and we offer those classes now. And then we were able to last month or in August, find space at the Track Armory here in Harlem in Washington Heights, which is, we used to do programs there, but it's a really big open space. So we just grabbed some of our mats from our Harlem gym and bars and a couple beams, and went up there and practiced for about a month, which is great. And we're just crossing our fingers that later this month we'll be able to get back to our gym. But we haven't been able to do that yet. And it's tough, but I will say the kids stayed in shape. It was great to see them, you know, because we practiced together, our whole team, rhythmic, TNT, and artistic. But we're hanging in there, and we're providing our classes on Zoom, and we're doing some free classes, free gymnastics fitness, and, you know, trying to keep that going. And, you know, we're just working to keep it alive. Next year we're celebrating 25 years, so we want to get to that milestone.
That is fantastic. So tell us how our listeners can support your foundation.
Well, you can donate is the best thing. Okay. So we, you know, on our website, and we have an initiative that we started after the COVID. It's called Flip It Forward. And basically what we're asking gymnasts to do is, you know, give donations, and because it makes a lot. A little money for us goes a long way. You know, $25 donation, you know, provides a full class for kids and leotard and things like that. We do really well with a little bit of money, and we do really well with a lot of money. so a lot more kids. So the first thing I would say is donate and just realize that what you're doing is really providing kids. We've had so great. So we've had gymnasts, really wonderful gymnasts from up in Westchester donated for her bat mitzvah. It was the cutest thing ever. Aww. She looked this out. She says, I want to donate. Everybody that's giving me money, we want to give to the Gymnastics Foundation.
How
and people
sweet.
Just do different things, little fundraisers. And it goes a long way because if you love gymnastics and hopefully you love being able to provide it for others to enjoy it. And so donate is the best thing for us. And, you know, we have some volunteer opportunities. They just connect with us, follow us on social media, see what we're up to. And we'd appreciate it.
Can you give us specifics on how we can either contact you or what website to go to? I know you said Flip It Forward, but mm-hmm. Can you give us specifics so people can chime in and
certainly. Our website is wendyhilliard.org. And so it's wendyhilliard.org. And there's a lot of information and donate buttons and things like that that are there. The initiative, if you look it up, it's Flip It Forward, Wendy Hilliard Foundation. That would be best. And then, you know, our phone number, I would say also by email, info@wendyhilliardfoundation.org. The easiest way is to go to the website or follow us on social media, just kind of Wendy Hilliard Foundation, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and we're on TikTok too. So, you know, you can find us that way. And yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today to our podcast. Once again, we want to thank our sponsors, Gymnasts United, Inc. and Pope Counseling for supporting this podcast. If you would also like to donate to this podcast, you can go to anchor.fm/Gymnasts United, Inc. You also can go to www.thegripcast.com. On next Wednesday, which would be October 14th, we will have a special guest, Gina Paulus, and we'll be talking about adult gymnastics. So tune in next Wednesday. We'll be right back.